Good afternoon. What an amazing time of singing and study and delicious meals and visitation between sessions. It's truly been a good day. God has blessed us tremendously. God made us after his own image, male and female. It's interesting to think about how much has changed in the last 100 and 125 years here in America as we think about the genders. It's interesting to think about the movement to neutralize the genders. You know, it is easy to look back and at first glance say perhaps the greatest changes have been among women in America. And there have been a lot of changes. In 1893, Colorado was the first state that gave women the right to vote. And it wasn't until less than 100 years ago, in 1920, that the 19th Amendment of the Constitution gave every woman in America the right to vote. Quite a change. It wasn't just 55 years ago, in 1963, that Congress passed the Equal Pay Act, demanding that women be paid the equal salary that men are being paid for equal jobs. In 1973 was a tremendous change, not good, but tremendous, and that is the Roe v. Wade. That was coming off the beginning of the sexual revolution. It's also the second wave of feminism, and so that mixed together gave the women that were advocating the promotion of feminism, it gave them the right, the way to boast and say, finally, we have the sexual freedom that men have. Because now we do not have to worry about the inconvenience of children. In 2013, there was a lifting of the ban of women serving in combat roles in the military. That was in 2013. In 2015, that was lifted in all positions, in all occupations of the military. That's just a brief scan of 125 years. It might be easy to say that things have changed more in America for women than they have for men. And I'm not here to argue that and try to win it, but I would say it this way. There's probably been a lot more changes with men than what first meets the eye. You know, if you go back a few decades ago and up to the present, and you look at a sitcom, if there is a married man or father in the living room of the sitcom and there's four other people sitting there, he's going to be the dumbest. He's going to have the beer in his hand that you can't rely upon, and all the butts of the joke are going to be on him. Now, if you go back just previous to the last 25 years, 30, before that, and you look and say, okay, what about 30-minute shows? What did the man look like there? Well, remember Leave It to Beaver? Remember his father? Responsible, loving, strong, kind. Remember Andy Griffith? You know, Andy Griffith was the man who in town was, of course, the sheriff, and he served his community in a very honorable way, and everybody looked up to him, kind of man he was. But he also, the show revealed his friendships. He was a very loyal friend. He was a strong friend. He was a man's man. And then he'd go home, and the tender care that this strong man would provide for his son and for his aunt. The view of masculinity that was upheld in that day and time versus the view of masculinity that's seen today is very, very, very different. So where did we go wrong, and how did it happen? You know, the fact is that if you put together how important it is if you look manly today, this was a survey that was done on one college here in America, and it was very important to 15%, almost 16% of the men. This test was taken by young men. It was very important to almost 16%, and it was somewhat important to 56%. So if we're being optimistic here, we have about 72% that took this that to some degree said, it's important for me to look masculine. Now, On the flip side, if we want to be pessimistic in this, it's really hard to believe that there'd only be 16% of the young men that would say, sure, it's very important to me as a young man to look masculine. But that's how much our society has changed. That's how much it's shifted, where the idea of presenting yourself as a strong male is not on the radar of most young men today. Now, when they were asked where they looked for their view, this is no surprise. 87% said to their father, and then going down the line, about half to their uncle or grandfather, a few to their brother, others to friends. To the top, about half found it in coaches, some in teachers and counselors, at the bottom in family friends. And so that's no surprise to us, where young men are growing up and they're looking for masculinity. Now, one of the reasons I included that today is because I want you to realize there are young men that are watching you. They're watching you as a Bible class teacher. They're watching you as an elder or deacon. They're watching you as their uncle, as a father, as a grandfather. And you better believe they're getting some kind of idea of what it is like to be a man. The world's going to show them an entirely different picture than what they're going to see of Christian men. And so society is neutralizing this, but God, if He created it, also gives us instruction in Scripture. And so what does God show us about masculinity? David Morrow wrote a book several years ago, and the book was entitled Why Men Hate Church. And I don't agree with everything he proposes. I don't even think everything he proposes is completely accurate, and I don't agree with all of his solutions. But I throw it out to you to get to thinking about it. He even started a website, and his website wasn't encouraging men to be masculine, as you might kind of be surprised. His website was encouraging churches to reach out to men. He wasn't in ministry. He was sitting in church one Sunday morning, and he was bored as he could be. And with his marketing mindset, he thought to himself, why is it that most of us men hate church? And he said, I put on my marketing hat that day. And he said, I thought about from the time I walked in the building. In my mind, I walked through the foyer, and I thought, okay, how's it decorated? He said, I sat in the auditorium I was sitting in, and I looked around, how was it decorated? He said, then I went over all the announcements of that day and who they pertained to. And he said, it became very clear that most churches in America today are marketing to middle-aged and older women. And he said, it's no wonder men don't like church. Now, I'll give you a little side note that is just a note of interest. Mainline denominationalism for several years now has been on sharp decline. But what's been on a sharp uptick? Community churches. I'm not saying I agree with either one of these. I'm just giving you an observation, okay? What he described was mainline denominationalism. That's not a description of the community church movement that has been very successful in reaching out to men. So I want to encourage you, I just throw that out for you to think. Why is it that some churches, that their focus on their activities, their ministries, their decorations, everything is feminine? And why not masculine? Here are some things that, let me give you a quote from Dave before we move on, because this was really what stopped me when I was reading his stuff one day. And I thought, even though I don't agree with everything, he really got my attention with this. At one point, he says this. How did we get here? And this, he's speaking in general terms of the churches under the label Christian. He says, how did we get here? How did a faith founded by a man and his 12 male disciples become anathema to men? Why do Christian churches around the world experience a chronic shortage of males when temples and mosques do not? Why are church-going men so hesitant to really live their faith when men of other religions willingly die for theirs? And so from this, here's some statistics of again, this is under the broad label of Christianity, just to get us to thinking about America and then even the Christian label of America to see where we are today. Typical congregation today has 61% female, 39% male. There's probably, I don't know if there'd be anybody here that's ever been a part of a church where there were more faithful men than faithful women. It's almost unheard of. On any given Sunday, there'll be 13 million more adult women than men in America's churches. Now, I want you to think back to the first century. It wasn't the case. Like, what's changed? Our culture has changed in a tremendous way in the way we view masculinity. In the first century, the men were outnumbering the women, it appears. This Sunday, almost 25% of married women, church-going women, will worship without their husbands. Midweek activities will draw 70 to 80% female participants. 70% of the boys who are being raised in churches will abandon them during their teens and 20s, and many of them will not return. Churches overseas report gender gaps of up to 9 women for every adult man in attendance. Any of us been involved in mission work overseas knows the great challenge of establishing elderships because of the shortage of strong, masculine, faithful Christian men. Christian universities are becoming convents. The typical Christian college in the U.S. enrolls about 2 women to every 1 man, and fortunately, at Freed Hardeman, we're 45-55, and so that's not true of us. Fewer than 10% of the U.S. churches are able to establish and maintain vibrant men's ministry, but yet if we probably asked you, how many of you have a women's ministry in your church, odds are probably almost every one of you do. But if we said, how many have really active men's ministry, there might be a few of you that do, but it's not common. Why are our churches not able to successfully reach men? And outside the walls of worship. Have churches become feminine? Why does it matter? We could give a lot of things. This is the result of a survey. None of this would surprise you, but this was literally the result of an in-depth survey. And it is that whenever congregations, if they have enthusiastic, committed males a part of their service and their worship, that the congregation tends to have growth. They tend to be healthy, they tend to be united, they have increased giving, and they retain their young people. And so what is it about masculinity today in America that is so, so difficult? It's natural. How many of you tonight, you'll go to bed, and if you're laying down beside your wife, 1 o'clock in the morning, you hear a noise in the kitchen, you both wake up, how many of you are going to say, honey, go check that out? You break down, you have a flat, you break down, you run out of gas, it's, 11 o'clock at night, it's sprinkling rain, and it's going to be about a half a mile walk. How many of you can say, honey, I'll just wait here, you go get the gas. And of course, all of you laugh. Why do all of you laugh? Because there are characteristics of masculinity that we just know. Like, it's just that way because God made us that way. And yet, why is it literally in America now, that those characteristics that in some of us, and because of either how old we are and also because of spiritual knowledge combined, that seem so natural, why is it today that in America, those very same characteristics that were so clear at one time, they're not clear anymore. They're not noted as strong points to say by young men, I want to be masculine like that one day. Or even parents raising young men. I want them to be masculine one day. My wife grew up in a family. She's 1 of 3 daughters. And there's dad, great man, and 4 women in the house. I dated, I got married, got to know the family. We had a son. One day I said to her, I'm holding our son. He's just a baby. I said, I need you to know something. And I said, we're not going to raise a sissy. I grew up out in the country, and we were on motorcycles and dirt bikes and horses and breaking horses and I said, I want to tell you something from experience because I saw this in my mother. And I said, there's going to be a lot of times that the best thing you can do is just go back in the house. I know that's hard growing up in a family of girls. I know that's hard to imagine. And I know you're going to think, but he'll get hurt. And the answer is yes, he will. And we'll make some ER visits. And but we're not going to raise a sissy. Now, I'm not suggesting that masculinity can only be accomplished on a dirt bike or horseback ride. I'm not suggesting that. But I'm saying to you, there are characteristics of masculinity that have to do with courage and strength and et cetera that is missing today in America. I want to share with you a thought from The Way of Men, another book on masculinity. And he says, for what may be the first time in American history, the average guy can afford to be careless. Waves of men now can opt out of contributing to society at all. There's no immediate effect to their reputation or to the community in which they live. Men can live at home into their 30s, in their parents' basements, playing video games all day long, and their world just keeps ticking. That's a messed up society. And we can't buy into it. We can't believe that that is the answer for what God has planned for us. A couple of years ago, a few years ago, well, it's probably now, it's been 3 or 4 years ago, I was down at a scholar's day where various papers were being presented everybody was a PhD except for this one young man, and he had just finished his thesis, and he was the exception. They invited him in because they were so impressed with his thesis. And they gave him about 40 minutes to present about 270 pages of research that he had compiled. And what he compiled was a paper he entitled, Be Men, Be Strong. And that's out of the end of 1 Corinthians. And it was a study of masculinity in the Pauline corpus. It's Caleb Cochran. And his presentation was really amazing in the research that he did. He wanted to study Pauline's writings on masculinity, but to establish what did masculinity look like in their culture, he went back and did a lot of research on literature during the first century. Just like today, what are heroes going to look like today? That's where you get kind of characteristics of masculinity in various time periods. Pick up a Western book. What does the hero look like? Look and see in war movies. What does the hero look like? Or go and look at Andy Griffith. Who's the hero of that show? What does he look like? Well, you can go study the first century and say, what are the men that society was holding up as the hero? What do they look like? And he takes and sees characteristics what the first century was experiencing, and then took Paul's writings and says, how much overlap is there? How much difference is there? And what does masculinity look like in the New Testament, and especially in Paul's writings? And it was really a tremendous, tremendous piece that he put together. And so, how much time do we have? Okay, and so Let me we'll go maybe a little bit slower through the first four or five, and then just kind of list about a total of nine. But the very first one that's so obvious is that of courage. And I do need to note this, because it's a little disappointing the first time this is said, okay? So here's your moment of disappointment. There is not a black and white line that's crossed that says, this is a characteristic that is feminine, and men do not have it at all. And this is a characteristic that's masculine, and women don't have it at all. That doesn't exist. But what we do see is there are characteristics that even though women would have them, and God expects them to have it to a degree, when we think of these characteristics, immediately we think that would be a manly characteristic right there. And so this is what we see here. And I love it out of the end of 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter. And you see there in the middle of what he does here, I'll read the entire verse here. It's short. This is where he says, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. And instead of saying be brave, the King James translation would say, quit you like men. And the ESV would say, act like men. And the NAS would say, or the NIV would say, be men of courage. Now, I want you to think it's interesting because 1 Corinthians is written to the entire church. And so this is even a time where he is saying to the men and women, as Christians, there's times that you're going to have to be courageous. Like what, Paul? Be courageous like a real man. Women, there's going to be times where you're afraid. Stand up for the Lord anyway, like a man. Men, there may be times where you don't know if you can really stand up and be courageous. Stand up like what? A man. Why? Because courage is a characteristic of masculinity that we ought to know and appreciate. Now, when we think about our religion, I hope you can do this, because if you will, this will be a takeaway for you. Just for a moment, wipe your slate clean of what you believe about your faith. And imagine someone coming up to you for the very first time and saying, I believe in a man, Jesus Christ. It's worth it for you to lay everything down in your life and follow him. You say, well, tell me about this man. And he tells you the story that is supposed to draw your life to follow him. And the key to the story is crucifixion. Crucifixion. And then the question is, will you die to self? Go in a watery grave of baptism and be resurrected? And will you go tell everybody you know that they too need to crucify their life of sin? And they need to surrender to the one who's been crucified for them. Have you read the story of the crucifixion with fresh eyes lately? It's a gory story. It's hard to swallow. There's nothing feminine about that story. It's a masculine story that's crying out for individuals to do courageous things, like become a follower of Jesus Christ. And so in the beginning of this book of Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians 2, is where he literally says, now keep in mind, he's walked into Corinth trembling and afraid, but it didn't stop him because he was acting like a man. And when in that passage, he says, I wanted you to know nothing except what? Christ and him crucified. I came to give you a message of crucifixion. And he closes that very same book to say, now step up. Act like men. Where is that courage? That courage is found in men who are following the man of God. Another characteristic is that of self-control. And you know that self-control is a fruit of the Spirit, and there are many, many ways in which we ought to control ourselves. We're going to be judged by every idle word that comes out of our mouth. We could just give a long list of ways. But you know, over and over, when Paul, in Pauline's writings, was talking to men about control, like in 2 Timothy 2:22, that we needed to flee youthful lust, and also in 1 Corinthians 6 and 18, to flee sexual immorality. And, you know, it is interesting how we naturally admire someone who has the discipline to control their life. If you think about it, going back to picture a great Western or picture a great war movie. And have you ever noticed that during those movies, and if you've never noticed it before, you won't miss it after I plant this seed in your mind. The hero is always the one that when everything's going crazy around them, everything's falling apart. And I mean, everybody's running, and everybody is their adrenaline's pumping, and they're confused, and I don't know what to do. The hero of the story will be the one that's calm. He'll be under control. And the hero will be saying, this is the thing that we're going to do. We're in a world that is spastic. We're in a world that spiritually is out of control. And we're supposed to be the ones, not because of our own flesh, but because of the God we follow. We're supposed to be the ones that's calm and under control. And when we see someone that loses the control, and we were kids, remember, picture yourself back when you were 14 or 15 years old. One of your buddies just lost control. And you looked over and said, baby, get it together. You know, it's a sign of immaturity. Okay, we are really out of time, so here's your list, okay? This is the 9 characteristics. That's misspelled. Endurance. 2 Corinthians 4, 1 and 16 is probably some of the most beautiful passages in Scripture about endurance. That's where Paul bookends to not lose heart. And verse 8 through 11 is in the middle of that, where he will not quit, and it's absolutely powerful. And when he says, I'm now ready to be offered, that's his cry of I have endured. Strength is a universal measuring stick of masculinity, and Paul knew that his strength was founded in Christ. I don't know if you've ever thought about 2 Corinthians 12 and 9 and Philippians 4, 13 say the very same thing. They just use different words to say it, but it's the very same message that he found his strength through Christ. Authority is a part of masculinity. Elders are men, and deacons are men, and leaders of teaching and preaching are men, and heads of the home are men. And it breaks my heart to see men say, well, you know, that's just a lot of trouble to be an elder. That's just a lot of trouble. I just don't want to bear that burden. And I mean this in the nicest way when I say it. It's time to man up. If the Lord's church is going to be moved forward, it will never move past its male leadership. The Lord's church will never move past its male leadership. And so a part of being masculinity is say, sure, leadership's a difficult job, and it takes a lot of my time and energy and effort, and if God gives me that opportunity, I'll do it. Public speaking. Now, I probably ought to take the word public off this one, even though that's the way he had it in his study. But it's the idea of being able to present your thoughts. It's to be able to stand before your family and say, as for me and my house, this is the direction we're going. It's able, like Lemuel's mother, when she taught him to be the voice for those that have no voice. Who can stand up? That's what masculinity is about. The male body and the competitiveness. See there at the bottom, 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27, 2 Timothy, the second chapter, and verse 5. All those are powerful athletic illustrations that in essence, in those passages, are showing what the body can do. In masculinity, male sexuality is not how many different partners. Instead, it's one man committed to one woman and to his family. And it's a beautiful view of masculinity. And that's what masculinity is. What's being sold to the world today is not masculine. And I wish I had time to drive that home a little bit, but please dwell on that. What the world sells in sexuality as being masculine is not at all. It's far from that. And even just the family role, spiritual leader of the home, to know his wife, 1 Peter 3 and 7, be responsible for the training of the children. That's masculinity. And so today, I urge you to think the responsibility we have to ourselves, in the sense that we are to be masculine as men, but then I urge you to realize the responsibility you have as an example, that there are so many around us. I'll close with just sharing this with you. If you take men out of the home, most of the time government is invited in to help out. You take men out of the Lord's church, usually women feel forced to step up and start doing things that men ought to be doing. And you take men out of culture, and masculinity disappears, and that culture will never be what God designed for it to be. God bless you. Amen.